okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Welcome back to Stacks and Tax. I'm Tom Holly. He's Mr. Mel Weber. SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures down 22. Dow Futures up 128. As all the big companies seem to be gleeful about what's going on in the world right now. Lou, how are you?
I'm very good this morning. How are you?
You sound good. But are you in Denver? You're not. You haven't been in Europe for a while, right?
No, I haven't been back to Italy since the first part of the year. So we're on hold right now for that. I wanted to kick off. I realize all we've been talking about is the coronavirus, but I thought I would just kick off a discussion this morning about that video that I circulated to the group yesterday with a lecture by the statistician from Washington University in St. Louis, and maybe Maddie can find it and pull it down, but. This discussion raises something that I hadn't heard anywhere else, and it's a really interesting talk. It's about 6 minutes long. I'll probably talk for longer than that just about it. But
well, that's all right. You know, sometimes you have to help the guy out a little bit.
Did you listen to it?
I did not. I'm not sure when I got it. I did not.
Okay. Well, let me just lay this out, and this is her discussion point. The woman is a statistician. She's a business expert, but deals in data management. And she took a look at the numbers that were coming out of the Wuhan flu situation and said, you know, the initial estimate from Imperial College was off by a factor of 20. And in fact, we are seeing a number of you know, discussions about why these projections were off so much. And so she starts a very basic number analysis of information, and she points out that the key values in a pandemic or an infectious disease situation are values that are referred to as R0, which is the reinfection rate in a population that is presumed to be vulnerable to the virus and without the protective measures, and a value called R,
yep,
which is the reinfection rate with steps that have been taken to cut the spread of the virus. In both cases, the reinfection rate is simply an average of how many people a single infected person will contaminate before they don't become infectious anymore. So she says, okay, I got these values, R0 and R, and as, if we can get, if the R0 value is less than one, or the R value is less than one, then we are looking at a disease that eventually is going to disappear. It'll stop after it infects a certain number of people, because it can't sustain expansion. The R0 value for Wuhan flu is thought to be somewhere around 2.5. In other words, an infected person on the average is going to reinfect 2.5 people before they don't become infectious anymore. And that's a number that gets you a sizable expansion and continuing developing growth. And then the R value, however, she analyzed it, looks like right now that it is not greater than one. It looks like it's less than one. And she's looking at these projections and saying, how come these projections are so far off? Why did we miss this? And she then begins to do a look around and say, I wonder if there are any experimental situations where I can look at a closed population that was subjected to infection, and if we can get an accurate picture within a closed population that was supposedly susceptible to this thing early on, so we can see what it really spreads like. And she said, we have two examples, of closed populations where this thing got loose, and you know, we can look at the spread over the course of a 15-day period and see what the values look like. And those two situations were the Roosevelt, the aircraft carrier, and the Diamond Princess, the cruise ship, both with roughly comparable numbers of a population that, again, in the case of the R-naught value, are expected to be susceptible to the spread. And she looks at the numbers and crunches them and says, you know, you end up with an R value in both cases of less than one, given the population and given the measures that were taken. On the cruise ship, they could isolate people. But on the aircraft carrier, they really couldn't. The aircraft carrier was the living conditions, everybody stacked together. The population density of an aircraft carrier and a cruise ship are somewhere, comparable to, in excess of anything you would find in a normal city. Something like 90 people living in a single house. And the spread of the virus through those populations indicated to her that, in fact, the even though the R-naught values might be sky high, the R value, in other words, the spread of the virus with either protective measures or some other protective factor, was less than one. And that would account for the fact that the casualties of this thing, the deaths, are much, much lower than the projections. Short answer is, she said, you know, there's no cure and there's no vaccine. So once the virus gets into this population, it goes until either it peters out or until everybody gets sick. What she said is everybody's not getting sick. And what we have determined as asymptomatic, the asymptomatic spread of the virus, in fact, might not be the spread of the virus at all. Again, there's a large population that doesn't seem to be affected by this. Her position and the numbers that she's running, and this talk breaks this out in much greater detail, indicates that, in fact, as much as 80% of the population might be immune, and just straight up immune to the disease, and in fact have been exposed to it, but are not affected by it in the slightest. They don't develop antibodies. They don't get sick. They don't have any symptoms. It just doesn't hit them. And her main comment on these two petri dish situations, which is how she referred to them, is that if you look at the end results, in terms of infection rates, they're virtually the same. What is different is the number of people who die. And more, 9 people died on the Diamond Princess, and 1 person died on the aircraft carrier. And she said that simply is a result of the fact that the population on the average age of that cruise ship, so you're talking a couple of thousand people on the cruise ship. You know what the average age of the cruise ship was, Chief?
Probably 65, 70.
69.
Yeah.
And the average age on that cruise ship is the factor or the reason why you had 9 people dead. Same number of people roughly infected, but the end result is more serious because of the age of the population, which is, as she noted, the single biggest factor in fatal results. I'm a cynic, and because I'm a bomb thrower, I will say that the most important thing you can avoid, or you should avoid if you are trying to avoid fatal results from COVID-19, is not to be in a state run by a Democratic governor. But that's just my sarcastic and cynical way of phrasing it.
Or a mayor who thinks she's your mom.
Well, it it's the governors, chief, that have been putting people that issued the executive orders, in some cases reissued the executive orders that forced nursing homes to accept HIV or Wuhan flu positive people, Wuhan flu infectious people, and forced those nursing homes to take those people back into a population that was just incredibly vulnerable.
We've had some other...
The numbers, but anyway, her point is, the reason we're not seeing the kind of massive reinfection rates is because people are immune, and they're immune at a very high rate. And then she ends it by saying...
When you say immune, are you still a carrier? I think you're still a carrier.
But it doesn't matter. If you can't be a carrier if it's not even affecting you, but you might be able to walk around spreading it with, you know, contact maybe. But anyway, her point is, it doesn't matter whether you're a carrier or not, in the sense that you're not going to reinfect enough people to keep the disease going. I don't know if she's right, but the statistical analysis that she does makes perfect sense, and she explains it all very clearly. I don't think I've explained it very clearly, but she explains it all very clearly.
When I first
tweeted the video out, or Kevin sent it to us, and we retweeted it.
When because I found it here. When I first read the, I've given the story a few times, but when I first read the in-depth studies in South Korea and in Germany, I still have not read any from here, which is interesting. But that doesn't mean they're not there; it just means I haven't seen them. And they start talking about the peculiarities of this disease. When I read it, I go, "We've never seen anything like this. It's going to be a serious problem." And the peculiarities in both studies essentially lock up exactly with what you said. And by the way, I think I thought I sent everybody yesterday. I don't know, Matt, if you got it. There was a cruise ship that evidently went to, from somewhere, was there, it was at sea a long time. Because I think it started from like South America and went to Alaska or something. It was a long cruise. And everybody in the thing had a huge infestation of the virus. And there was a researcher on the cruise ship. And I don't know if he had tests or they flew him tests or what, but he said 80% of the people who got it, and this must have been a younger group, said had no symptoms whatsoever. They tested positive for it, so they had it. They weren't, quote, depending on how you define immune, they weren't immune because they had it. And I assume, I don't know that for sure, were able to pass it on, but had no symptoms of their own, which is virtually the same as I've read in about 8 different spots. South Korea and in Germany, they say, if you're, not everybody, some people have this overreaction where they get the clotting and all that stuff, which is dangerous, young people. So it's not every single young person doesn't have a problem, but most of the time they don't. I mean, a serious most of the time they don't. And a couple guys said it was like a mild cold. They wouldn't have stopped sports. They wouldn't have done anything. They would have just kept playing. I mean, a couple guys said they knew they had something, thought it was a very mild cold, nothing, no big fever, no anything like that. So yeah, when I read that this thing is very infectious and a lot of people don't even know they have it, two things popped into my meager head, said, this is going to be a problem. And by the way, it's not going to be as deadly as people think. And A, it's a problem. And B, it's not as deadly as people think, right? I mean, it's, but.
Yeah, also her analysis indicates, and again, you got to look at this from the perspective of two things. Number one, she's not an epidemiologist. She's just a data cruncher. So her conclusions are based on the validity of the data. And as we know, the data are problematic on some of the, especially from a number of other countries. But her data indicate that the R value is less than 1, which means it's not spreading. So whatever it is, these people are not contagious enough to spread it once it gets into the general population.
I'm gonna say Lou, that I, again, I'm not just pushing back because it's radio, but I'm going to say that her calculations, I'm sure, are 100% correct. But I'm going to say that no matter who she is, if she's Solomon, you can't make head or tail out of this because the data blows. I mean,
that was, and so I've created problems on for myself on Facebook with some of the postings that I've put up on this, because what I'm interested in doing is looking at the data that's driving the conclusions. And we know that, for example, Medicare is giving an extra 10% bump for facilities that have people with that are treating people with the Wuhan flu. So that immediately causes a financial incentive to report the number as a Wuhan flu positive. We know, for example, that New York has been deliberately minimizing its numbers for nursing home deaths by saying that unless you die in the nursing home, it's not considered an infection, a nursing home infection. We know that China has completely blown off its numbers and have made its numbers low. And the fact that our press continues to hammer, you know, U.S. total deaths while ignoring the fact that China is underreporting and has underreporting.
Oh, China's probably, I'm going to say China's
in a scandal.
I'm going to say China's in the seven figures.
I would say China's seven-figure deaths as well.
Yeah. Here's two things that happened last couple of days, Luke. This is just anecdotal evidence. First of all, did you, speaking of pieces of paper, Manny, did we tweet out the Indiana study that Kevin sent us about a week ago?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, you did.
That to me was the only real attempt at real data that I've seen. And it showed pretty much exactly what you said, Lou. But here, one of the people that works with us, she's been barricading at home for the last month, so hasn't come in the office. Well, guess what? She's got it at home, or I think she does. All the symptoms are the exact same, and the fever and all the whole bit. But she's coming through. She's okay. So she calls her doctor, and he says, "By the way, since you have had a history of asthma." Obviously she'll go nameless. I don't want to get a HIPAA problem. You should go get a test. Well, guess what? So few people are going to the drive-through test things that they shut them down, or at least the one by her. So they're shut down. And, so she calls the COVID 1-800 COVID number, whatever the hell it is. And she gets a guy and he says, "Well, is your fever over 100? She goes, "No, it ducked under 100. I'm feeling better." "Well, then don't come in." "Well, I'd like to know if I have it or not." "Well, if you come in and you don't have it, you're liable to get it here. And yeah. By the way, if you do have it, you're liable to get somebody sick on the way here or here. So my advice to you is to stay home. If the thing goes back up over 100, call me back, but it probably won't. And go get an antibodies test like a month from now and see if you had it." So how the hell are any of this data any good, Lou?
Well, again... what's happening is a recognition that, A, this is not smallpox or Ebola. It's bad. It's very bad in certain populations, but that's a limited, very limited group. And that for the vast majority of people, it's not going to create, this kind of a problem. Unless you're in a certain situation where you are getting a massive dose of it, and hello New York City, hello parts of LA, but other than that, for the most part, it seems to be
these two studies I read, Lou.
And the reason you're seeing people out at the beaches, and you're seeing people, you're seeing the looters in Minneapolis, not wearing masks and using hand sanitizers, is because they know. People know that it's not as dangerous, and so I think that's driving
the other piece of news, the populist reaction,
and with respect to the medical reaction, our experts are doing what scientists do. They are testing. If the tests don't validate their conclusions, they revise the conclusions, and this has been a constant process of revising conclusions from day one.
Well, the other piece of information, I talked to one of my friends who's has a group that owns a bunch of nursing homes, and in one of their nursing homes, just the other piece about this thing, though, Lou, it is incredibly contagious the first few days somebody has it, even when they don't know they have it. And they think that one person who served trays of food at one of their nursing homes infected 40 people.
Yeah.
Well, so it's not like it's...
The Koreans, and again, our tests, the antibody tests, and the may be wrong. I mean, I saw the number yesterday. May be wrong in as many as 50% of the cases. So we don't have a reliable... I don't think anybody believes we have a reliable antibody test. The actual COVID active test, the Wuhan flu active test, is giving a lot of false negatives as well.
Well, which one?
I don't know the number.
Well, the revised one that's the nasal swab is pretty damn accurate. The one that Abbott came out with, which is supposedly the 5-minute pinprick one, which everybody loves to take rather than having a thing stuck down your nose, is not very accurate. It throws off a bunch of false negatives. That's why everybody's giving the White House a bunch of crap for using the Abbott test. It's a lot easier than having somebody stick something up your nose every day. So, but the one that the test that people don't want to take is pretty accurate, I think, from what I understand.
The point is we're trying to generate real-time numbers with these things.
Without doing any random sample, without doing anything like that.
Yeah, contact tracing and all this is simply not... is not going to track this and is not as effective.
Wait, whoa.
For the simple reason that 80% of the population may be immune anyway.
You don't understand. If you're in Illinois is trying to hire hundreds and hundreds of people for August to do contact testing. Jay Pritzker's new idea. By that time, I was going to know who the hell I even saw. And secondly, do we really need more state employees? We don't have enough people at home?
Yes, we do. We have to have the entire state of Illinois needs to be working for the state.
Yeah, because that way they'll all vote for them.
And think about this is another reason why I'm looking at this stuff, you know, askance. Think about the control element that you have with contact tracing. Think about what you know about people with contact tracing. Think about how much information you collect. And how much information goes into the database. If you put a program on everybody's cell phone and you tell people, you've got to put this app on your cell phone that tracks your contacts with everybody else around you. Do you think the state, after it looks at things like crime fighting and other benefits that it's going to get from that, do you think the state's going to go back and say, yeah, wipe that thing off?
Well, I would say that because of the toll road episode, when they're not supposed to keep that data and yet always do, I'm going to say the chances of them getting rid of it are pretty slim. Matter of fact, none.
This is one of the reasons why I'm not a big fan of mail-in voting. And we use mail-in voting here in Colorado. And it's incredibly convenient, and it's very easy, and I think they do a great job of it. But when you do mail-in voting, you're filling in on a scannable sheet that has your name, your address, phone number, all the contact information that the state maintains on you. That's on the form. It has to be, because that's how they check off whether you voted or not. It goes into a machine that's, it's read, and then your name is checked off against the master list. And your votes are checked off, which means there is a machine possible connection, a software connection, an algorithm connection between your name and your vote.
Why would anybody in America, Lou, and I've had this discussion with our, if it's highly high tech, it must be good, Mr. Weber. How is it there's a certain discipline in walking down the block? Now, I know in some parts of the country it's a little harder, but walking down the block, having them look at your signature, check your address, look you in the eye, and there's a somewhat of a discipline there to voting. And by the way, they don't get to know how you voted. The only thing they get to know, I guess, is if you take the Democratic or Republican primary thing. That's the only piece of information they have on you. Why are people so anxious to give them more information just to keep their fanny on the couch? I mean, I know people travel and so forth, but with some people, I mean, it's not that hard to get to the voting place.
I've always felt that voting, the act of voting, is an important civic responsibility. It's a right, but it's a civic responsibility. And and not voting is a right. And so if you don't want to get up off the couch and vote, or you don't believe it's going to make a difference, then you should have the option of not voting. And the whole point of mail-in ballots is to make it easier for people to get in, but it also creates a potential database. And
How do they know it's you?
If I get a potential database of your vote,
if I get 40,000 mail-in ballots from, say, Inglewood, not putting a term on anything, or West Virginia, or the mountains, or someplace, how the hell do I know it's you? You're not dead
right.
Well, what's the point? Why?
And let me put it this way: it's rife for ballot harvesting.
That's what I'm saying. Rife for it. Why is? Yeah. I can't stand a man, but he's not all wrong. I mean, with Trump, it's when a political party says they want this new ballot way for people to vote, it's always because the people who are voting that way are going to vote for them, if they're really people at all. I mean, SP futures up 7, NASDAQ futures down 32, mixed market. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, just Matt Weber. Mr. Lou Michaels on the line, all feisty this morning. S&P futures up 850, NASDAQ futures is down 27, Dow up 123. In the Dow, I have pretty much everything is up. The only ones that are down are Microsoft. They actually had a rough day yesterday. It was down 4 and finished down 1 something. Microsoft was down. We had some of the FANGs were down yesterday, so it was not as wild of a day to the upside as it would seem. And in fact, most of the day, the NASDAQ was down well over 100. But anyway, then it closed up. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 51. It's up 0.4%. FTSE up 52.8%. CAC around up 45.9%. It's not every day that your central bank over there gives you $1 trillion to run your market up like we've been doing here. Very strange world. Nikkei up 497. That's over 2%, 2.3%. Shanghai up 9.3%, Hang Seng down 168, that's 0.7%. The bonds, the 30-year yield is 0.67, so back down. The bond minus 0.43, Japan minus 0.004, so call that flat. Oil down 28 cents, 32.53. Brent down 15 cents, 34.59. Natural gas unchanged at 188. RBOB 98 cents, back under a dollar. RBOB was a big drop yesterday. I don't think the gas prices at the pump are going down that quick here, at least not here. Gold up $12, $12.39. Silver up 14 cents, $17.90. Copper up a penny to $2.39. Maddie, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start again on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No delays to report. We do have a crash on the exit ramp at Irving Park Road on the inbound Kennedy. That is causing a bit of a slowdown as you try to get off of the Kennedy onto Irving Park Road on the inbound side. So keep that in mind. And then just east of there on Irving Park and Western Avenue, there is a crash. So a couple of issues on Irving Park Road on the north side of the city. But everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds early, showers later on, a high of 78. Right now it's overcast and 70 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, very hot today. Sunshine with a high of 109. Right now it's clear and 83. In sports, yesterday we talked about the NHL, their plans to resume their 2019-2020 season here. Returning to action in early July. Major League Baseball, not so close, Chief. After the owners suggested a 30% cut for the players, as far as what their salary would be after the prorated agreement that they made. The players came back and are now proposing that they'll play more games in exchange for receiving their prorated salary. So instead of the 82-game proposal that the owners proposed, along with a split in the profits, the players are saying, no, we want our prorated salary like we said last time, but we'll play more games for you. We'll play 100 games.
Do they
games.
Think for a second that the owners are going to make as much money as they would in a normal year for those 82 games?
I don't think so, but I don't think they care. And so it doesn't look like baseball is anywhere close, but supposedly the players will have their counter offer at the end of the week.
The owners are rich, but you can't get blood out of a turnip, as the Irish used to say.
That's true. It's just hard, you know, when you look at ownership groups that are worth $2, 3, 4 billion fighting over, you know, a $50 million payroll.
I wonder if they get to prorate a share over a 90-game season, what percentage of the revenue that is. I bet it's pushing 75.
That's likely. I mean, I'm astounded. It's, you know, come on, guys, you're in the entertainment business, which means you've got to be entertaining, which means your customer base has to at least like you, and an inability to come to an agreement on this is not going to make anybody like anybody right now.
Well, I got to believe that if you're even as pompous and as big a babies as they were supposedly, although I never actually met one, so I shouldn't really say that. if I was an opera star and they told me that there a tree fell on the opera house and I could only put half the amount of people in there, even I would say, gee, I'd like to perform tonight, but I guess I can't hold you to the full number because it doesn't leave anything for you. I mean, the whole world, if everybody doesn't get something, Lou, things tend to fall apart, as they say. I need to wet my beak. Real quick, Lou, I just show you, I'm a little...
By the way, I want to, again, direct your attention to another... Actually, this is a very positive Illinois event.
Hey, you know what? Before you do that, though, careful. Before you do that, I have to say something bad. Today, I should be going to a wake, and tomorrow a funeral of a 96-year-old lady I've known for... Not real good friends with her, but I was real good friends with three of her sons, actually four. One of whom died tragically in a car crash, and the lady died, and obviously I'm you know, best buddies with a couple of the sons still. Played softball with them since, you know, God knows what year. And no wake, no funeral. Can't even go to the outdoor at the where they're going to put, you know, the coffin in the ground at Holy Sepulchre. Lou, that sucks big time for you know, all I can say is may the fleas of 1,000 camels infest Jay's armpits. I can't even, I mean, I'm not going to say anything bad. I don't want anything bad to happen to anybody, but that is so insane. The lady's got like a daughter or two that have been nuns. You can't tell me that 40 people can't find a way to stand in a cemetery and not without, you know, 15 feet because Jay says so or whatever. If I want to take my chances doing that, Jay, it's up to me. I'm just sorry. It's up to me, not to you.
So that's the perfect, first of all, my condolences. That's the perfect lead-in for another reference I want to make, and you should be able to find this online, Maddie. It's the May 22nd order from the court in the Pritzker. I think it's Maine v. Pritzker is the name of the case, but it is the judge's decision on the restrictions put in place by the governor in Illinois, and it's a biting, terrible, attack on the governor and the craziness of the order and the executive orders. The court, I think one of our listeners may have tweeted it out, but in any event, the link to the opinion is there, and it's a fascinating read, as this judge just says, four people, you know, going into a marijuana dispensary is not going to make you sick with COVID, but going into a church will. Going into a Walmart doesn't make you exposed, doesn't get you exposed, but going to a funeral does. A golf, you know, we know that, or we understand that the virus doesn't propagate and is actually killed by sunlight and doesn't really affect young people to any great extent. And yet all of our summer youth programs with outdoor activities are canceled. And he just enumerates all this. And then he says, the governor tells you that if you travel out of state, you're putting people at risk, and yet his family travels to Florida and to Wisconsin regularly. And he just notes... He gives the famous line, when the rulers or when the people making the decisions and making the rules are not subject to the rules themselves, Illinoisans are no longer being governed, they are being ruled.
Well, that's absolutely right. Well, Lori got her haircut.
It's a really interesting opinion, and I will direct you to that. I also cannot understand how bad... Maybe Illinois doesn't understand how bad the optics are with Mayor Lightfoot sending police to shut down church services and the images of that while 40, what was it, 50 people got shot over the weekend?
I think it was 45, nine dead.
Nine dead. And, you know, where is, as I said early on, you remember my comment early on, where is the comparable outrage and police enforcement efforts directed at that versus shutting down church services?
Lou, she did a Twitter, Facebook, or whatever the hell it was. Speaking of which, Zuckerberg, just because somebody gets to run a place like that and sell people's information that people are dumb enough to give them, does that make him somebody that should be on TV giving his opinion about stuff? Anyway,
here's what's even more interesting. Never mind even giving his opinion on stuff. Facebook and Twitter and the other social media accounts, you know, have an exemption under the law for defamation because they just claim that they are republishing stuff, but they're now editorializing. And I'm not talking about, you know, whether you think the president's right or wrong or whatever, but they are editorializing and putting commentary on the president's. As somebody pointed out, they put commentary on the president's tweets saying, you know, this may or may not be factually accurate, and yet they allow the president of Iran to come on and say we're going to blow up Israel and we need a final solution to the Jewish problem, and they don't even challenge that. So I mean, whether he gets to be interviewed on TV, I don't know, but I do know that they are desperately trying to shape public opinion right now.
Well, I don't necessarily. Well, Lori Lightfoot comes on and does a thing where she's talking about hiring in the city, and when she goes to hire people, she's looking for people that are in tune with her new world order. She actually said this, and I'm sitting there going, "It's not up to me. I don't want to." Clearly, if I was on a big radio station, I certainly couldn't mention that somebody who, first of all, you can't criticize at all, really, because of the demographics, right? And she's black, she's female, right? And she's gay, so you can't say anything bad about her, which I won't. But I will say this: you would think somebody in that position, it's not up to me to tell her who she sounds like, because I don't want to. But she should be well read enough in that position to know. She should know who she sounds like and stop it.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I've been saying for some time, Chicago is as close to a fascist, you know, classical fascist kind of government that you could imagine.
Oh yeah.
You know, the one party, the true one party state, with an inexorable and total involvement with business and seamless connection between business, the political system,
and
the population.
Well, very, very few pieces of the business. A very small minority that controls the place. And the astounding part, Lou, is there's always money for something. Now, the state is flat-ass broke. And yet, Jay can find the money to hire hundreds of, disease chasers, or whatever you want to call them. Yet, Mayor Daley always found money for, I mean, I don't know who his buddy was that did the wrought iron fences. They're everywhere. Doesn't matter. With the last dime, you could have a wrought iron fence put up someplace around a park. Ram could always find money for the turning the streets into bike lanes or something.
Are those light displays still up on Congress Parkway?
The what? Yeah, they're still there. All the bulbs are burnt out, though, and they never replaced the bulbs. How scary is that? And Lori is talking about... So people can socially distance, she's going to turn streets into walkways so you can be further apart from people. Outside. Is she out of her mind?
Yes. No, this is no longer about disease control. This is about power.
Yep.
And what arbitrary and capricious way we can control people's lives. And you're right. They don't understand what they sound like, but For whatever reason, this is why you're getting the pushback and the mass disobedience.
You're not getting anywhere near as much pushback here as you should be. Nowhere near as much. It's because nobody wants to insult her.
Aren't people going to the beaches?
No, they're still closed.
They're still closed, but
that's hilarious.
They're still closed, but people over the Memorial Day weekend were busting through barricades and all over the parks.
But it's not formal. It's not like there's a huge demonstration at City Hall saying we're going to recall your ass. I mean, there's nothing like that.
Well, it's astounding to me that she gets away with, and any of these big city mayors get away with it. I mean, Andrew Cuomo, Bill de Blasio, has revealed himself to be a complete fop. Cuomo, as I said, the most important thing you can do to stay alive during this outbreak is not to be in a state with a Democratic governor where they are forcing people into these nursing homes. The statistics on the deaths in those places versus the total number of deaths in the United States are staggering.
Well, Lou, if you buy into the idea that, you know, one life, you know, if you could somehow present it, prevent it, and they give you a list of things they say could prevent it, and some of them don't sound awful. I mean, I'd love to be the guy who came up with this, the polyurethane barriers. They're everywhere. So I go to Home Depot last night, right, minding my own business, to buy some paint equipment. And, you know, you put the mask on, you walk in. Well, there's supposed to be cashiers where they still check you out. There's four people standing there with their masks on, doing absolutely nothing, pointing you to those things. They don't want to check anybody out.
Yeah.
Well, what are they doing there? And at Home Depot at the end of the year, all they're doing is raising prices. They must have eight people in the place doing nothing but telling people how to behave. They're trying to get some help from somebody. They don't know anything about any product. I mean, I went to the Sam's on Monday or Sunday. Actually, it was Monday. And there's got to be five people outside, you know, watching where the carts go, making sure people are in line to get in if the line gets too big. And, look, what are they doing? There couldn't have been 100 customers in there, and there's 10 people directing whatever traffic isn't even there.
But I mean, the reason they're doing this, Chief, is because of liability concerns and because of state regulation. So the state says you've got to have this kind of control over the people in your store. Okay, fine, that's what you get. And then in addition, the stores are looking around saying, we don't want to get sued by somebody who walks in and says, you didn't have somebody making sure that everybody had a cart and that all the carts were disinfected and that everybody was staying away from each other. So I'm going to sue you if I get sick. Well, and this goes back to that fundamental issue that we raised in our last discussion about changing the law so that if you go out in a stadium or out to dinner, you are effectively assuming the risk. You don't have the ability to sue the restaurant owner because they weren't disinfecting the menus every time through. And don't get me started on schools. If you look at the recommendations from CDC on restarting the schools, it's impossible. You're not going to have schools, which based on the, quite frankly, based on the quality of the education product that I've seen coming out, is not going to be a bad thing. I'm all in favor of homeschooling at this stage, given what's the product that seems to be coming out of the
high
schools and especially our colleges.
Well, you know, there was a number yesterday that came out that 2,200 people in the Chicago public schools, they haven't even found since they closed. And most of the
you mean employees?
Yeah, no, yeah. Students that are supposedly being homeschooled, so all the teachers get paid, and they've got Manny. What did I send it? Was it most seniors check in 3 days a week at most online, or something like that? Seniors in high school are checking in 3 days a week and like still getting diplomas and stuff. I mean, it's pretty unreal. Well, I mean. But I don't know, what is the motivation?
CPS is a disaster.
Well, what is the motivation? I mean, just from a dollars and cents standpoint, I'm going to say on March 16th, when this thing looked like it was going kind of crazy, I didn't really have any issue with those guys shutting things down for 15 days just to find out where the hell they were. I honestly didn't have an issue with that. But now it's become, like you say, it's moved into the power elite. You can walk, but you better have a mask. You can walk, but you've got to walk 6 feet away from somebody.
Importantly, here's the thing that drives me crazy. These rules don't apply to the people in power.
No. Oh, God,
You've got the governor of Michigan who puts a lockdown order on her place and says you cannot travel to your summer home if you have one. And her husband is up at their summer home last weekend, trying to get his boat put in the water and getting their house ready. And when she is challenged on this, she said, well, it was okay for him to go up there because he had to rake some leaves.
Yeah.
You've got Pritzker's family traveling all over the place, notwithstanding the state's order not to do that. You've got Cuomo's brother basically breaking quarantine over and over again. And in New York, I mean, it's people see this, and you look at this and go to the politicians. What are you guys doing?
Why isn't there more? There's an awful lot of people who love to be told what to do. I mean, my lawyer buddy and his wife walked by. Of course, they're 70-some years old, and they're carrying their bags at the golf course.
I think that's true, but I think a lot of that is virtue signaling. It gives you a chance to virtue signal. You don't have a mask on, you're an evil person.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You're breaking quarantine, you're an evil person, and I can point that out for you.
My friend says to me, what do you think of all this, Meth? And his wife says, she loves Lori, she's like the hysterical mother. I love her. And I go, I don't need a mother, I need a mayor. I had a mother, she did a nice job in my mind, I don't need another one.
Which leads me into, I want to talk briefly about, from a employment law perspective.
Okay, I started first. One brief thing.
Okay.
Why is it, just in terms of money, and usually these guys, or ladies and Lori's, unless they think there's just an incredible amount of money they can tax when this is all over, they're both broke. Their state, their city are broke. And that, at some point, is going to come down on them. What is the motivation for closing Lou and Maddie's blue jean shop when you're paying property taxes and forcing people to Amazon where you can buy blue jeans, or Target or Sam's or Walmart where you can buy all the blue jeans you want? Why are they so anxious to keep your shop closed? Why is it that your mattress shop, which there's five around where Maddie and I live, why are they all closed, and yet you go to Target and buy a mattress anytime you feel like it? Is it, did Target put stock in there? Are they just that stupid, or is there some more? Is there more motivation behind it, Lou? Does Amazon stock get in their pocket? When what happens?
I think they're just that stupid. When they designed the rule and put it in play, there was an emergency situation. We can allow people to go into these places where there's lots of room to spread out. We're not going to allow people to go into these other places where there isn't room to spread out. And that has now been cast in stone.
But for how long?
Nobody knows how long.
The reason why I'm asking, Lou, is I'm as a trader and as a money manager. And by the way, I don't know why people are not putting more of their money in places with managers like me that when all this big party of money coming in ends, they at least can protect themselves if they want to, but people they've bought into this, Lou. The Fed's just going to keep doing whatever, going to keep pumping this. Anyway, I'm used to making a decision on a trade and 3 days later saying, well, you know, I need to adjust that a little bit. But it's 3 months later. I mean, how is Jay still driving by the mattress store and wondering, gee, they could have five people in there. What's the problem? Why are we keeping that guy? And by the way, he can't be paying his taxes by now. That's a problem. I mean, it's time to review your decision. I do that every single morning. These guys, they make a decision in January. It's still got to be right in June so they can say they were right.
They don't have the flexibility for that, number one. And number two, so their political advisors are telling them you can't back off on this. You have to double down on it.
All right, one last question before you can. What is it about the state of Wisconsin? I got some stuff yesterday from Kevin and some other people, not just him, actually. They were having this governor or the Supreme Court up there with a new ring in hell just for them because they were going to kill zillions of people. And here it is 14 days since they opened up the state and they've had no increase in cases.
Yep.
When are people in the other states going to wake up and say, we're the ones that are wrong?
Well, it's not going to happen as long as the mainstream press is, as long as your main media establishments are so virulently anti-Trump. This is a Trump narrative, and they will not, under any circumstances, go back and make it look like he actually was correct in his assumption on this.
Well, I mean,
they're just not.
If he's correct, it's kind of by accident. But still, anybody
gets
to be correct.
It doesn't matter.
What they say is even a blind squirrel finds an acorn every now and then.
That's right. Yeah, it's moral luck.
Yeah.
So that's another lead into the topic I want to talk about quickly, and that is this Amy Cooper situation in New York. With the viral mob going after her, and you know she's fired, and she admittedly engages in conduct that was horrific. But I want to point out just a couple of things. This is the situation where the woman is walking her dog without a leash, and this guy says, "You need to put a leash on it." And she says, "I'm not going to." And he goes, "Well, you can do what you want, but I'm going to do what I want, and you're not going to like it." And then she gets hysterical and says, "I'm going to call the police and tell them an African American man is threatening me." And you know, she does call the police, and I mean, it deteriorates from there. The video of it goes viral. She's fired by Franklin Templeton within 36 hours of the episode, and everybody's condemning her and all that. And I just wanted to just make a quick comment on this. I mean, one of my friends called me and said, hey, can they do that? Can they fire her for this? This is another example of what I call the Ray Rice principle in action, which is you can be reasonably horrible to somebody, and I think both parties, by the way, in this case, were horrible to each other. You can be reasonably horrible to somebody until it gets on video.
Yep.
And once it gets on video, you know, you're in trouble.
You're in the court of public opinion. Well, you're in the court, yeah. And once you get to the court of public opinion, other courts might as well stand down. Any common sense, it's whichever side the tweet storms land on.
So this happened. I mean, this terrible event happened, and she engaged in bad behavior. But I mean, so everybody's saying, well, she needs to be canceled, she needs to be fired, etc. And I was laughing about it to myself and sort of ruefully, because New York State and New York City especially is one of the major places where ban the box legislation occurred, which means you can't ask. A ban the box statute prevents you from asking about the criminal background of a job applicant and then making a decision based on that criminal background unless it directly relates to the job. So this woman says some terrible stuff, right? She says some terrible stuff. Maybe in direct provocation of the fact that she thought she was being threatened. But anyway, she says it. And so now she's canceled. Whereas if she was making a job application with a felony conviction for criminal assault, armed robbery, or some other crime of violence, her employer would not even be able to consider it or ask her about it.
But if everybody found out about it,
the culture we're in.
But if everybody found out about it and tweeted about it, and the employer did find out about it, then he could fire her.
No, he couldn't. No. There's case law on that specifically.
Really?
If in fact that was the case, the employer would be handcuffed. Still,
really.
So it's a really interesting disparity that I think is something that needs
add,
to be noted.
Add it to the list.
Commenting on it.
Add it to the list of disparities we see every day.
Yep.
All right, buddy. Yep. Take care of yourself. Stay distant or something. Whatever. Do something. We'll talk to you next week. S&P futures up 475. NASDAQ futures down 58. And Mr. Farihamzi, you have for the break.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again. Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber. I also have Mr. Farhi Hamzy from Hamzy Analytics. S&P futures up 5.
Good morning, sir.
NASDAQ futures down 59. So we had a little bit of a rotation yesterday as well.
The Dow was way up. Hello, can you hear me okay now?
Yes. The Dow futures were way up yesterday, or Dow was way up yesterday. At one point, the NASDAQ was actually
the
down.
The S&Ps were way out of HQ yesterday, almost all day.
Well, we've decided that our big companies are going to weather this tremendously and even be bigger when it's over than they were before.
Well, no, NASDAQ's got big companies too. Listen, biggest companies are NASDAQ. What is the value? Value all of a sudden took over techs.
Well,
come on, you went to U of Chicago. Do I have to go over this with you again?
I think the COVID.
I know what it is. I know it's Matt. What did you put in this coffee again?
The COVID companies. COVID companies are pausing a little bit. The Netflix.
Well, you mean COVID? Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah, the COVID companies, the Netflix, the Google, and the Amazon that we all need when we're shut in. Now that we're a little less shut in.
I thought you meant, what do you call it? Like, I thought you meant the one that has to do with the.
The
COVID research.
Well, the Moderna that doesn't have anything on the market ever.
Yeah, exactly. And they got $500 million.
Yeah.
And the guy who started Harvard Medical School, I think that's what they're saying. It's kind of a little weird because I thought medical school has been there for years. But anyhow, they tore him apart. They totally tore him apart, saying that, how do we give money to these people when they have no record? Why are we doing that? So.
Well, he couldn't be the head of the original head of Harvard Med because they were doing studies 100 years ago. I don't know if he's that old. So something's weird.
Pardon me?
He couldn't be the original head of Harvard Med since they were doing studies 100
years
ago.
Exactly. I mean, he does look semi-fossil, but not as bad as McConnell or Pelosi. But, we got to have some reference, right?
Yeah, you got to have some reference.
But he tore him apart. I forget his name. William Hillstent or something on the editorial on the Washington Post. I mean, just really ripped him apart. And the fact that the whole thing smells, the guy who's head of it is from Moderna, the bald hair guy, like a Munsef, whatever that first name is. And 2 days later after that announcement, the whole story fell apart. The stock was sold. So
well, let's say that
I've never seen so much corruption in my life.
Well,
third world countries have less corruption than we do.
We're working at it. Everything these guys everything these guys have done now this week. We've got Merck getting involved. And their stock ran up.
That's good though. Merck is good.
But what I'm saying is, every one of these guys has done something in my mind worse than what. And I'm no big fan of the man or his behavior. I'm a fan of his intellect. Elon Musk was spanked pretty hard and took his job. He couldn't tweet and he couldn't. Didn't he have to give up his executive position at the firm or something?
Because for the time being, not for long, but he did. Yeah,
because he said maybe I'll take the place public at a certain price. And these guys are waving vaccines.
No, private. You mean private?
Yeah, private. I mean, these guys are waving vaccines in front of you that don't even exist.
Yeah.
But that's okay because it's amazing how the SEC decides who they're going to go after. I mean, I'd love to find out the politics involved in that. I mean,
that's our problem. We always go back to the politics.
Yeah, we don't like Elon Musk.
Administratively, we can't get anything done.
No.
It's all politics.
Well, we don't like Elon Musk, so we probably have 15 people watching him on every day. As soon as he said something wrong, we go after him. And yet these other guys.
Well, you see what he has said recently. He's got like 4 homes in Bel Air, north of Sunset. I'm selling all of them. I'm sure. I think I'm going to go and just rent for a while.
You know what?
That may not be a bad idea, but you know what? That just chills down every realtor in the, you know, the upper crust of you know, this social stratosphere out there in California. Of course, it impacts the industry too.
Mafari, as you well know, and she's been on the air, and she's terrific. My significant other is in real estate, and she's very good at it. She loves people. People love her. Very businesslike and pleasant, which you don't usually normally find out. Her pals, most of them, are somehow in real estate as well, either mortgage or something. So you can only imagine when I get with this group, and I have some alternative things to say about real estate, how well that conversation goes. But I will say that any person right now, unless you get an unbelievable deal, given where the interest rates are and the money being poured in and where I think mortgage rates are liable to be 5 years from now and where I think the taxes in Illinois are liable to be, if you don't pause for a second, I'm not talking about if you have a home and you need, you know, another bedroom, selling your home and buying the other home or something, essentially making the trade, that I get. You know, you got another kid, you need another room. But you're buying one, selling the other, right? To say right now that I'm all of a sudden going to invest in five Illinois apartment buildings or homes, boy, talk about sticking your hand in a shark tank. I mean, I can't even imagine where do people think that this money's going to come from? I mean, there's places where Audrey has done business where homes are 58 grand, in lousy neighborhoods. Oh, lousy neighborhoods.
And, 58 grand. You know, in California, you can't get a bathroom for that.
Let's just say that...
Forget a room. You can't get a bathroom for that.
Some of the areas in Chicago that have seen people leave, shall we say, that population has all been pushed in the south suburbs. And the south suburbs have had some dramatic closings of big malls and so forth, where a lot of the tax was coming from. And they basically just sprinkle it around the rest of the infield to the rest of the people. She sold a three flat, totally remodeled, you know, with all three floors. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, you like floor, but you and I could easily have lived in one of those apartments. They were very nice. And 98 grand the place went for, and the guy's taxes are like 10.5.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, some of the houses that are 58 grand, the houses are over 5 grand, the taxes. I mean, we're talking about, you know, way more than the mortgage. You know, even at Flossmoor. Flossmoor used to be the second nicest place to live in Illinois when I was a kid, next to Kenilworth. And that area has changed demographically. You know, where do you think all the people from, you know, the Cabrini Green and all those places, they knocked them all down, they all went south, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, but
right.
The demographic has changed. Now, you can buy a mansion in Flossmoor for probably under 200 grand, but your taxes are going to be 30.
Lovely.
Yeah, lovely. And these guys think they're going to raise these?
Why don't we just have China come on buy you guys out?
Yeah.
Like as a city, just one check.
I mean, Governor...
The whole stock and barrel, the whole thing.
Governor Jay is...
And with provisos, you guys will also teach your kids to talk Chinese.
Yeah,
Governor Jay actually asked that long term.
He's betting everything that he's going to win this amendment that says you can have graduated income tax in Illinois. He may win it.
I mean, who's he?
Jay Pritzker.
Pritzker?
He couldn't get an amendment on the ballot to deal with the pension problem, but he got one
right.
To deal with the income tax problem. So what is he thinking? Is it going to be like 20% if he wins? Or 10 or 15?
Wow.
I mean, what are we talking here? I mean, really, anybody who thinks about, I mean, let's put it this way. PTI was here because, you know, people work here, take the train and so forth. Well, but the exchanges were here. We were able to exchange tours, those kinds of things. I mean, we're in the options and futures business, and we're right next to the options and futures exchanges. At one point, the second, I believe this to be true, Fari, although, you know, I don't know if it's rigorous, the second biggest tourist attraction in the city of Chicago was the Board of Trade Visitors Gallery next to Buckingham Fountain.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And,
wow.
Because Buckingham Fountain is number one, right? And
okay.
Probably Willis Tower is probably up there now, I would think.
It's gotta be, yeah.
Since they made it way, since they made it way more union. Well, the SIPO was not known as like the Board of Trade.
But Wrigley Field, the museums. I think the Bean is up is like number one.
Yeah,
now.
The Bean's got to be number one. Yeah. But I'm thinking, I'm going back a ways, but now that's closed. So what exactly do we have to be here for? I mean, I still have you know, my heart is still here. You know, I like to be able to say, well, that used to be an exchange. You know,
I said you lived in San Francisco, no?
Well, I mean, why wouldn't I be in you know, in Portage or someplace, or in Wisconsin, or you know, why don't I go to some nice little town in Wisconsin?
Yeah,
I mean, what is the point? And now they're going to make it miserable for people. Downtown here looks like a neutron bomb. You go out in Orland, you go to Indiana, you go to Naperville. It looks like there's people live there. What does this look like down here, Matty? If you can count two people on the street at any given time during the day, it's unusual, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, the office buildings are 95% empty.
Yeah. Wow.
But I think everyone's going to be coming back next month.
But does everybody expect these buildings to pay
taxes?
Yeah,
I hear you guys opening Monday, right? Is that real?
Who's you guys?
Chicago, from right here. No, I mean, I got a lot of friends in Chicago.
No. The state. The state has said
that they're real.
The state is starting to move to open. Actually, this weekend,
tomorrow.
The city says not so fast.
Yeah.
Wait a second. You guys are in your office right now, right?
We are because we have an essential.
Yeah, you
business.
Can't do that. Right. You can't take the studio home. Okay.
No.
So, are you guys essential workers?
Yeah.
Just when you were, man, you become essential workers.
Yeah, we're essential workers.
What's going on here?
To be clear, everyone can go to work now.
Yeah.
And that's been true.
Oh, you can?
That's been true for a long time. It's up to the, Now, if you're a white-collar business, most often, and you have the ability to work from home, those leaders are choosing to allow their staff to continue to work from home at least through the end of May, and then they're going to reassess the first week of June.
There's the five of us, and for the first 4 weeks, there was one other person in our building for it.
But I can go to my building. I can go to my office anytime and work a whole day if I want. You just have to wear a mask in the common areas.
Across the street, you don't
want to wear a mask.
You know where you used to buy us the Starbucks stuff? Well, first of all, that Starbucks is now closed. That building, the 175 West Jackson, is a full square city block. I believe it's still the third biggest building in the city in terms of square footage. There are 9 people working there.
175 Jackson? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, a couple of hedge funds are there. Yeah, wow.
It's a
nice lobby. I like your lobby over there.
Well, they spent millions and millions of dollars on it. That building was in pretty much disrepair. It was bought by some people in New York, a bunch of diamond workers. And they spent they spent over a decade, they spent like $80 million.
Murray.
Yeah, they spent like $80 million on a place, or 100, or some huge number. Then they got it back to where it was pretty much all.
I thought diamond business was tough.
This is, you know, when they bought it, the bar restaurant there that we used to go to closed December of 2000.
Gotcha.
And they were 10 years remodeling the place.
And they got 10 years.
Yeah, and they got back up. Well, I mean, it's a building; it's a whole square block. They got back up to where it was 85% occupied. Then they sold it. And I don't know what they did to it. They raised the rent or something. Downstairs, CVS left. But this is the weird part. See if I can remember the numbers. This is how bad. I'm saying this is how bad Chicago is. CVS was downstairs. They'd been there. It's a big, huge CVS, and the place was mopped all the time. They had one of those, Maddie. What do they call them? A net lease. Where you're
triple net.
Well, you end up you have your rent, and then you have the taxes and the other stuff grew as time went by. Well,
triple net.
Yeah, so all that was picking up. So their rent, not that I know this, but I have sources, was $17.5 a month. Over the decade or so they had been there, guess what their triple net add on started to be? It's $10,000 a month. The increase in taxes. I'm going to say a building. I won't say ours because I would never know that information. The taxes have gone from something like 10 years ago, $40,000 to like 140. 10 years. I mean, it's absolutely off the chart. I mean, what are they going to do, double them again? Same time they're going to tell people to stay home? I mean, there is absolutely no thought process. And the weird part is, Farhi, we keep bringing money up to talk about the market because that's why we're here. Yesterday, the ECB decided they're going to throw $1 trillion at it over there. or net, well, 750 euros, which comes out to be close to $1 trillion.
Correct.
Now,
yes,
we're going to start pouring in at the system. Yet people aren't here. Nobody's. I mean, why would you? We got to be pretty close to not paying rent. Some of these people, or they're saying you got to cut it back. Now is this building expected to pay the full tax number or the new tax number to the state of Illinois? Do these people just not know how money works? I mean, you, as I said earlier in the show, you can't get blood out of a turnip, as the Irish would say. I mean,
yes.
I mean, and now Lori's going to open up only the outside part of restaurants and bars. Well, the restaurant people that I know tell me that the outside part's a stone cold loser.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the places, and I ran into our buddy last night, our buddy Al, Manny, because I was on the way to Home Depot. He tells me that if you have an outdoor thing in the summer, you have to have it because it's competitive, but you have 8 tables outside, okay, or 10 tables if you're lucky. You got to pay the city for the permit. You got to pay somebody to put up the, whatever you call it, the stockade. You can't just lay them on a sidewalk, right, Manny? You got to separate them off somehow. What do they call that? You got to have some kind of a barrier, right? If you're going to be outside. So you got to put that up. He's got to hire at least one other wait staff person. And he says everybody's outside, nobody's inside. You don't make any more money. It just costs you more.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now Lori's saying you want to be outside. Well, what does that do to a place that only has inside? So or they don't know the numbers. You can open with 25% of the people. Let me get this straight. I'm paying full rent, full taxes, and now I got to hire back 75% of my people to service 25% of the people. Tanks for nothing. I mean, what are you? Yeah, what are you, some kind of moron telling me to do that?
Yeah. Thanks for no thanks.
But how at some point, for where I'm getting this long winded, when does all this hardship at the lower end make its way up the chain, or does it ever? Or
are you expecting it to do that?
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is, are we at the point that we can put
this is not the only area, I should say, or period where the people on the short end are going to hardship. That's just the history of mankind.
Well,
that's why we're in a rat race. We try to work so hard.
Well, I guess
if you fall down there, probably won't come back.
Well, in the 1920s, despite what a lot of people think, there were depressions in a lot of areas in the country. Coal miners, anybody in agriculture, and it eventually found its way to the big spot, whatever, Wall Street. And it eventually hit all the other people. There also was a time, other than today, it was the highest record where the top 1 or 2% controlled what percentage of the economy. And eventually found its way up. And now we're convinced that the Fed can stop that from happening this time, but what percentage of the population can be in the crapo and still have money pouring into the market and everybody up top being happy? It's getting higher and higher. I have no idea where the break point is. I would have said it was before this, but I would have been wrong. How much longer can we go like this? Does anybody think?
Don't know.
I mean, United Airlines stock.
I haven't figured out where the breaking point is, but it's got to be somewhere. What the hell? Hold on 1 second. One second, senor. 1 second.
What'd you do? The dog,
As I'm talking to you, I had the wrong mouse. I clicked. Let me book this. Hold on, Jack. Okay. It booked some profits for me.
Well, that's a good thing.
I took it. Yeah, but yeah. The other day I went shopping, okay, at lunchtime. I come back. All the accounts are flat. So I think. And there's one account with, I don't know, like 6-7 contracts on nothing, small. It's exploded on the upside. Almost missed a couple of heartbeats. I said, if that happened on the other side, I was going to explain it to an account holder. What did I do? And how would you know? The trade was open like 2 hours. I never have a trade that's open 2 hours. So I was gone. I wasn't even here. I wanted to see one of my doctors. I came back and the other side of the town. Wow. How did this happen?
Ferry, are you sure you're...
Man, I think I'm losing it.
Are you sure you're... Maybe you should get yourself an account here at PTI and call somebody with a trade. It might slow you down a little bit and make you okay.
Senor, these are NQ futures.
I'm just saying,
Please. By the time I called you, the price has moved. Please.
What do I do?
We're not trading TLT call spreads. Or your GLD, your favorite GLD call spreads. These are NQ futures, senor.
Yeah,
contract size 93. Contract size 180,000 notional. It's not for kids.
Well, you might want to keep track of what you're doing then. I'm just saying, you know.
I don't know what happened. No, I bought this mouse that controls three computers for one at a time. Did it go crazy on me? And I wasn't even there. How did it execute there?
I'm going to say...
Remember, there's so many places on it. This is a 55-inch.
I'm going to say if you have a mouse...
There's so many places you can click on. How did I hit the click and it... It must have been from last night, I forgot.
If you have a mouse that controls three computers, I'm going to say that's an accident waiting to happen.
Yeah, well, I have bad news for you guys. Friday, I had an MRI on my right wrist, and I've had this bout with CTS several times. It gets bad. I restrain, and you go to minimum zero, cut everything off. It gets well. Then another, you know, market or whatever, or system or challenge comes up, let's say. And I get back into it, and I damage it. I've got a pretty decent orthopedic surgeon from after my accident here 2 years ago, and he's keeping an eye on what I'm doing. So he finally squeezed me in to get an MRI because the MRI places were closed down. They weren't considered essential. Not my case. So I had to drive almost near Tampa, get it done on Friday. The preliminary results is not good. And one of the things was that I need a mouse like this. I immediately ordered it. It's here from Amazon. It's called MX Vertical. Mic X-ray Vertical by Logitech. It's at 57 degree angle. So it's almost like doing a handshake. Okay? It's not, your hand is not flat.
Manny,
is over the mouse.
Should we
the angle vertical.
Manny, should we send this Dr. Billy to Fari? I don't know if we want to do that to him.
Do what?
Our buddy Dr. Billy is a renowned hand surgeon here in Chicago. That's all he does. But I don't know. I don't know if we want to send.
I don't want to go surgery. I'm trying to avoid the surgery. But anyhow, this is supposed to help. And one of the beauties of it is $100 mouse. One mouse, $100. But the way they ease the pain is that you can connect it to multiple computers with Bluetooth. And as you move your mouse, it goes to a different screen, switches to a new computer.
Fari, if the mouse. Close the bad trades and let the good one run. I think it's a good mouse.
Yeah, I agree with you. just have to teach them that. Exactly.
I think
this one was not bad. Yeah, actually, this made $5,000.
If you can find one, just get one that closes the bad trades and lets the good ones run. I think
actually,
it's a good
to be exact, $51.40 before the commissions.
All right, so
that'll pay for breakfast.
We got to be running out of weeks where trillions of dollars are entering the system. What happens when that stops? Anything?
I think we're in a new territory. I think Jay Powell is telling us some of that. He's expecting some fiscal movements from the Hill. I don't think Hill knows what to do, because Mnuchin probably tells them who's going to buy all this debt. Other than Fed. I mean, if you do the math, right now we have $25 trillion. As of last night, the national debt officially was at $25 trillion. I'm going to tell you there's another 3 to 5 we're not reporting yet. So we're approaching $30 trillion. Somewhere in here would be a tipping point, and look what the Chinese are doing with their special drawing rights at IMF.
Yeah,
yuan is slowly creeping up against the dollar. Here's the other thing: the central banks in other countries who trade, who need to import oil, they have to pay in U.S. dollars. Oil prices are down, consumption is down, so both size and the price per barrel means the total value paid is low. Less. So they only need to keep a lot less dollars in their hand. That'll change the equation out there. We haven't figured that one out yet. Wait.
Well, we're trying to inflate our currency without anybody else catching on, and yet we've...
Exactly. Look at the oil trade. The oil trade will tell you that.
Look at
the aerial view of outside of California or Louisiana. Look how many tankers are sitting out there just waiting at 100,000 a day. Just rental fee sitting there.
Next time you hear your buddy Jay Powell say he's looking for fiscal policy.
What do you think is my buddy? Just because he went to Princeton?
I wouldn't say shoot the TV like Elvis used to do, but turn the TV off. Because
we can always send a missile there.
Because there is absolutely right now, and I don't usually say things that I think everybody should listen to, but for sure, this is for sure. There is no such thing as fiscal policy right now. They have no ability.
We haven't had it for years.
For years.
What fiscal policy? This is the biggest. Listen, before COVID, this was the worst president for containing the deficit, national deficit. Remember, part of his 2016 campaign that we're going to have a balanced budget in 10 years, I'll promise you guys.
Yeah
really. Yeah.
Well, how many guys? Every politician says that.
Let me say things, and I've got to go because Don Flake and John Mustaine are coming up. Here's what I said to a Trumpkin down here. I said, glad this is not 1933 and we're not in Germany. He goes, what? I said, listen, history will no longer be written by the victors. Again, he's still watching what I'm saying. I said, remember, now we have internet, we have everything in audio video. You can't erase it. It's once on the internet, you can't. By definition, it's copied in so many places, there's no way you can get to all the copies. Plus, they have everybody, all the players, in audio and video. So history will no longer be written by victors. We're going to get to the truth one day. What happened here? Because this is the biggest mess we've done. Hopefully we'll survive it.
You know what? When we come back, thanks very much, buddy. We're going to do these numbers.
We'll see you guys.
I'm going to talk to Mr. Matt Weber about that because I have a feeling. We'll talk after break, man. I have a feeling that Fari's wrong about that. Anyway, S&P futures only up $1.25 now. NASDAQ futures down 89. There's unemployment numbers. We come back, Mr. David Ailman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 2.25, and NASDAQ futures down 85. The numbers are pretty bad. U.S. first quarter GDP falls 5% versus a 4.8% drop expected. Durable goods are down in 17.2% versus 17 expected. And Maddie, over to 2.1 million on the unemployment claims, which pushes got to push us to 40 over the last however many weeks.
Yep.
So not good there. S&P futures up 275. Let me refresh everything else here. And NASDAQ futures down 77. We got the Dow is still up though. Everything up. Everything in Dow is pretty much up. Dow's still up 154. Big change or roll from yesterday from the NASDAQ to the Dow in terms of leadership here. Over in Europe, now again, these guys are still loving their trillion euros or trillion dollars they got yesterday. DAX up 67.6%. FTSE up 65. That's a full 1%. CAC around up 48, a full 1%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 497, that's 2.3%. Shanghai up 9.3%. Hang Seng down 168.7%. As Hong Kong obviously has some issues. Bonds, 0.69 on the 10-year here. Bund minus 0.42. Japan minus 0.004. Right, it's been like forever. Oil down 28 cents, 32.53. Brent up a penny, 34.75. Natural gas unchanged at 188. RBOB gas, man, these guys are down about a dime here since a few days ago, 0.98. Even though, like I said, gas prices don't went up a dime last week. Gold's up 1230, 1739. Silver's up 14 cents, 1789. Copper up a penny to 239. Rio Force Traffic Weather Sports. A lot of stuff today.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a pretty significant crash that just surfaced here on the inbound Ryan just before 31st Street involving a semi. The two right lanes are blocked with crews arriving on the scene, so expect delays coming inbound on the Ryan as you approach 31st Street. Also, on the Stevenson, I-55, looks like on the outbound side at Harlem Avenue, reports of a semi hit the overpass at Harlem. So the bridge inspector is out there and crews are out there. Not expecting a ton of delays from that, but on the outbound I-55, there will be a bit of a scene at Harlem Avenue because of a truck hitting the overpass.
If you take out a bridge, do they charge you?
I sure hope so. No issues on Lakeshore Drive in either direction. Northside expressways are all quiet, as is the Eisenhower. Suburban tollways are all quiet as well. Weather today, lots of clouds today. Rain in the forecast, a high of 78. Right now it's overcast and 71 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a hot high of 109. Right now it's clear and 84. A couple of notes on this day in sports history, Chief. 1957, Major League Baseball officially approved the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants move to the West Coast. The Dodgers, of course, arrived in Los Angeles, and the New York Giants, now the San Francisco Giants. So this was approved on this date, May 28th, in 1957. Also on this date, May 28th, 2006, Barry Bonds hit his 715th career home run, passing Babe Ruth at that time for second place on the all-time list. He, of course, went on to pass Hank Aaron as well. Chief.
There were times. Hey, David, how are you?
I'm fine.
There were a lot of times early in his career when Babe Ruth hit more home runs than virtually all the other teams did.
Crazy.
What did Mike Reichel say about him? He was a tireless smoker, drinker, and lover. Imagine how good he could have been if he didn't waste all that time playing baseball. What do you think of that?
It's excellent.
There's a people are multi-talented sometimes. You know what he reminds me most of is Paul Horning.
Well, if we learned anything about The Last Dance, he reminds me of Michael Jordan. Played 36 holes of golf, stay out all night, smoke cigars right before the games.
No drinking. He never drank.
He wasn't a big drinker, but basically did everything else. And still would perform on the biggest stage.
Amazing amount of nervous energy. The somewhere in one of those six or seven, one of the guys was it Costa? Said that out of all the athletes he's ever seen in any sport, he was probably the most dramatic. For all the athletes that had superior ability, he probably was the biggest overachiever of any he'd ever knew. Which he wasn't just, you know, if he was Babe Ruth, he wouldn't have been drinking, you know, type of thing. He was a absolute madman to be even better, even though he was that good to start with, which is somewhat rare. Matter of fact, it's very rare. If you're good, you just take it for granted, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how many times do I see you out running wind sprints? You know, you just go out to center field and catch the ones you can get, figure you do a nice job, and it's good enough. Go to the bar.
That's right. But that's what separates the great from the very good is, you know, everyone in the NBA or Major League Baseball or the NFL has superior talent, but then the ones that separate themselves are the ones that work the hardest, I think, in addition to it.
Well, I mean, I think some people have, you know, amazing talent in the sense that allegedly no one has ever, could ever, in a high level, no one could ever beat Dr. J in horse. Because he's the only guy in the world that could go up behind the basket and had such hand control that he could stuff from behind the basket.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's, you and I could work our whole life. That ain't going to happen.
No, it's not.
David, crazy stuff going on. We've got bad numbers. The whole world's, yesterday was the ECB's turn to throw $1 trillion at something. And European markets reacted. So did ours. It seems like big companies are going to come out of the COVID thing better than the little companies. Go figure. So we've seen this narrowness. Well, not narrowness, because they're actually spread into the Dow and maybe even moving away a little bit from, I'd call them the COVID stocks, the Netflix, the Amazons, and even though they were down a little bit, they're still not going anywhere. Netflix is the only one who's actually lost maybe a little something appreciably. What do you make of all this? I mean, is the Fed going to keep us up forever? This looks like it.
You always manage to pack about 20 items, yeah. 20 issues into one statement. You're absolutely incredible at doing that. I don't think that the market has come back to the small issues. I mean, at least the last couple, 3 days, you know, your Amazon has been under pressure. Your Facebook had a huge rally and then, you know, a break on, you know, threats from Trump on social media stuff. But as you pointed out, Netflix, even Microsoft's come off about 4 or 5% in an uptake and whatever. And the Russell, which has lagged for 15 months, 18 months, and to an extent has, you know, a heavy presence in smaller regional banks, has absolutely skyrocketed and led the way literally the better part of the last 2 weeks. So I don't know if going away from small, especially the last 2 weeks, is accurate. The other thing is looking at the regional bank indexes, ETFs, I mean, those have gone through the roof, and those were laggards and terrible and, you know, thought to be the victims, you know, big, huge victims of the COVID. So I think the two prominent issues now, you know, especially affecting NASDAQ and big tech, is, you know, one, the Hong Kong thing, which, you know, Secretary of State Pompeo has said, you know, favored status for Hong Kong is likely to be removed because they're obviously not autonomous from China, which, you know, pressured the Hang Seng index. And, you know, also, you know, if there's retaliation or whatever from China, you know, that's going to obviously put some pressure on big techs, especially ones like Microsoft, like China. Not so much Google because they don't really operate in China, or Amazon, but nevertheless, by, you know, just their weightings in the ETFs or whatever, if those are going down, then, you know, Google and Amazon are going to go down as well. And the other thing, besides, you know, the Hong Kong situation, which is rearing its head again, is, you know, Trump tweeting and saying, you know, I'm going to sign an executive order that is going to limit social media issues. So a skyrocketing issue like Facebook is set back along with Twitter and Snap.
Well, I mean, he has, he's been, a lot of guys have been trying to do that for a while, but I don't, I just don't.
It's well, supposedly he signed an executive order. I don't know what it said this morning.
Well, he was well, he was working on it last night. I didn't get the final version.
Yeah, I did not either. But there was something that went out today, and you know, Facebook cracked about $6, you know, from where it was in the pre-market. I see the last quote down 614.
Yeah, that's what I've got too.
So there is something definitely out there. So it's not just the Fed anymore. Whether they keep going or stop or another stimulus bill or whatever, we have these two other issues as far as social media in Hong Kong.
Well, and I think there's a, you know, as Fari was talking about, the idea of if it's become so obvious that they're gonna deflate the currency as a way to devalue the currency, not deflate as a way to pay the debt off easier, other people are gonna figure it out. The only way that it hasn't been figured out so far is everybody else is doing it too.
Right.
So I mean, you normally you would say you're devaluing your currency, and somebody'd say, "Well, what do you mean? It's up versus the euro." But the euro is doing the same thing. But I've never really seen. I mean, there has to be a somewhat of a historian, maybe my Fed buddy Robert or somebody. There's got to be a historian someplace. It's somewhere in history, David. I mean, the story of this would be. You would, everybody say the dollar was, $35 to the ounce of gold. This is back in mercantilist days. Well, you could definitely help your country in the short term by saying we're gonna make the dollar worth, you know, $40 per ounce. You devalue your currency, gains you an advantage, and your, the prices to your people, the stuff is now, more expensive to overseas, but it's cheaper for other people, so you end up, you know, selling more, but then there has to have been a time when the second we did it, the Brits did it, the Dutch did it, the French did it, the Germans did it, to where at the end of, because that's usually what happens, is at the end of the day, a year, 2 years later, these guys would get together on ship or someplace and say, look, this isn't working, let's go back to being normal again. But right now, we're sort of doing the same thing. I mean, these tricks are never, it always is, you know, makes Maddie mad that you can't invent a new fetish, they claim, because somebody's already been as perverted as you before. This is sort of the same way. This is the same trick that people did in the 1700s and 1600s, for God's sake. Oh, okay, right. We'll lower the dollar. We'll put more dollars out there. Okay, we can't do that. We're going to lower the euro dollar. Oops, here goes the pound. You know, here goes the one. These tricks they've all been tried before, right?
Right.
And I don't know how. I'm just curious, David. I don't know. Maybe I'll have to get the professor Hal Snar. Maybe will talk me down. How all of a sudden has this become, instead of crazy policy back in the 70s and 80s when we were all afraid of inflation, now it's become good policy again? I mean, what has been forgotten in the meantime? What papers have been written? What studies have been done to where now all of a sudden this is all a good thing and it's all going to work? I mean, I don't get the change in theory.
Are you talking about Fed policy and money supply? Is that what I'm saying, I know what you're talking about.
I'm saying you, 20 years ago, if you would have said to solve a problem, we're going to up the money supply 20%, right. You know, Milton Friedman would have spun over in his grave and all the guys that were his disciples would have said, wait a minute, you would have just did that during the 70s. Look what you did. You cost us a decade, right? But now it seems like we've collectively forgot that. And you actually have economists out there, oh, what's the problem? Well, what do you mean, what's the problem? But nobody, I mean, right now, I, you and I, the people on this show, I feel like once in a while you'll get a guy like Jim Grant will come on CNBC and he'll say the same thing we're saying. I can't wait to get him off, you know, basically. But by and large, everybody thinks that this is all sound economic policy. And I don't see where it became that again. But I'm sure people thought it was.
I have no idea. I mean, I'm going to guess, and you would certainly know this better than I, but I would guess that it has something to do with it, 2007 to 2009, you know, Great Recession. you know, just Fed stop it, Fed and Treasury, you know, backing up all, you know, debt and saying who wins, who loses, who has to go out of business and who doesn't. A little different situation because this is, you know, a health crisis rather than, you know, exactly a financial crisis. But when the economies are shut down, then it becomes a financial crisis as well. You know, I mean, let's face it, you know, you saw the stuffings taken out of the banks, both, you know, big banks and regional banks. And so, you know, the Fed stepped in and said, hey, we're not going to let, you know, Citicorp go out or, you know, whatever, or, Wells Fargo, whatever. We're going to be there. And, oh, by the way, you know, we're going to help municipalities with troubled debt and, you know, even corporate debt. Certainly that was a first. And I have no idea where it came from. I guess, you know, I mean, when they went to zero on a Sunday night, you know, in interest rates, you know, with the Fed, they obviously saw ahead for what the pandemic would do even before the administration. So I'm not justifying it. I agree with you. There's long-term deleterious effects. Sooner or later, somebody has to pay. And when you know, in a matter of a month or 2 months or however long it is, increase the money supply by 25%, and it's unprecedented, you know, there's going to be negative aspects down the road. I guess they just figure this is what's needed to rescue the economy. I'm not justifying it. I'm just trying to, you know, theoretically guess what's in their heads.
Well, I think that a lot of that is true, and a lot of it makes some sense. And you sort of, to me, I never was a banker, but you sort of draw the line between whether it's a liquidity problem or whether it's just a problem. And we had one of our listeners, Maddie, who was it that sent us the kind of funny poster was, liquidity problems means that we have a problem right now, and if you help us out, we'll pay you back eventually. And what was something else? A equity problem is you can give us all the money you want now and you're never getting paid back. I mean, there's somewhat of a difference here. And I think the 2008 stuff was there were drawdowns on money markets and things to where, the money markets, because the drawdowns were so big that they had to essentially liquidate their 6 month, 12 month paper, which
right.
Statistically you would never have to do, or you have to do it once in, you know, talk about a black swan event. I mean, it would be once in, you know, 400 years. Well, it happened. So for the Fed to step in and say, because the markets are screwed up and people are in trouble, that these particular bonds should be trading 95 and they're not, rather than having somebody puke them out at 40, which is absurd, we're going to provide liquidity so this market doesn't fall apart. Because we think the bonds, by the way, are still good, and they got no business trading 40. Now, that part I get, I agree with. It's quick, it makes sense, it's the banker of last resort. If, however, that bond is on, you know, Maddie Weber's hot dog stand in the park, and the park is shut down for 8 months, to buy the bonds on that hot dog stand knowing that Manny's got no dough left, that's a different game. And I think we've gone from game one to game two here. And we're buying stuff, and Brendan said it best 3 weeks ago when he was on. He goes, they're buying these municipal bonds to a point where none of the normal customers of municipal bonds will ever pay that price. So what are they doing? I mean, why would you ever drive a municipal bond to half a 1% or 1% when your customers are insurance companies and they will never pay that? They will never buy a bond at that price because they're not that stupid.
Well, and I guess the answer is they haven't learned from looking at the Japanese model.
Well, everybody thinks the Japanese model worked out fine, and I guess it did for the banks. They all kept getting paid, right?
Well, they went from, you know, a vibrant number two and growth economy to a way distant number three, way behind China, and, you know, the GDP has never come back. So I'm not talking about the Nikkei, but the actual, you know, Japanese, you know, economic growth or lack of. I don't see where anyone said, oh, geez, they did a great job with negative interest rates and buying stocks and buying distressed corporate bonds. I've never heard of anyone, you know, saying that.
Well, I guess this is the weird part. And Maddie, hit the switch if you want. What I find is as I age, David, every time you start to define a winner and a loser, it becomes the person who gets to define it. I mean, if you are a Japanese bank or a government official or somebody in the government over there, or even some of the few industries that have managed to hang in there, you did way better by those guys propping those banks up and never having one of those actually go out of business. They were zombie banks for 30 years, and they eventually made some of that money back. The people who ran the bank, they never had a hiccup. They kept getting paid. I mean, so it's like when I read the history of the Weimar Republic a few weeks ago, I was stunned, David, by the government considered it a win because they were able to renegotiate with France and Britain, even though they absolutely bankrupted their anybody with equity in their country. So in their mind, the guys who worked for Weimar, they thought they won, right? I mean, there's going to be people here with this crap in Chicago. There's going to be restaurants 40 feet over into Cicero. They're going to make out like a bandit this weekend, right? They're winners.
Yeah, no, I get it. There's, you know, in all of this, and we've been talking about it, you know, whether it's the, you know, Regeneron, Moderna, or whatever, the vaccine, you know, companies or whatever, which seem to be the ones to own, or the home, you know, small business things like Etsy and Shopify, you know, or Amazon, you know, those are the winners in this kind of crisis. And then your Macy's and Nordstrom's and, you know, JCPenney and whatever, I mean, those are, you know, obviously all the losers. Any kind of situation like this, whether it's the, you know, 2007, 2009 Great Recession or this pandemic, there's going to be big-time winners and big-time losers. I mean, who would have thought, you know, that the outdoor campers, the Thors and the Camping Worlds and the Winnebagos, you know, people say, hey, we can't fly, you know, we can't cruise, and so we're going to just, you know, rent or buy a Winnebago, and that's going to be our vacation. We're going to pack up the family and go. And there's a stock, you know, that's up whatever 150-200% in a matter of 2.5 months. Who would have thought that?
Well, that's interesting.
And I don't own any.
Well, I mean, you're gonna see a guy in New York, Cuomo. He made one of the dumbest decisions ever by sending those people back to the nursing homes. You could argue that his decisions cost a lot of lives. I'm not gonna say he did it on purpose. I'm sure he didn't. And you're going to say, I mean, in my mind, the man hasn't made an intelligent decision in the last month. Originally, he maybe had to do what he was doing, but now it's all about power and saving face. I'll bet the guy gets reelected. And if you were to interview a bunch of people in New York, they're saying, oh man, he's saving lives. He's the best guy we've ever had. Even though, on an empirical scale, he probably has not done a very good job at all. Yet, in his mind, he won. He's going to be a huge winner. Nobody will even run against him, probably. So, I mean, it's a question of point of view. If you have a place in New York and you're out of business and you're underneath the bridge, you don't think he did so hot. So, I mean,
no, I get it.
Just saying. You know, I mean, the bridge.
No, I agree.
Yeah, and then to make matters worse, Wacker Drive flooded for the poor guys that live down there and the homeless guys. Anyway, is there any place you can put where can you put a chart on this, David? I mean, especially, one thing I will say, I've never seen, like you were mentioning earlier, we have a lot of people coming, we should be way more that are worried about their portfolios right now. And I do have openings for a few, and so does David, but not very many, because people are coming. Got some of these portfolios I've seen, David, they've got like, you know, guys with $1.5 million they must have 100 positions. Some of them are proprietary funds and the firms are in it. They're all designed for you not to be able to leave and not be able to hedge your position. I don't know how people get talked into that, but they do. Anyway, what I was saying is, how do you, I've never seen the indexes you pick are so important. Even the last week, you pick the Russell, you're a big winner, the Q's, you're not. Now, last January, a year ago January, if you had picked the Q's instead of the Russell, you're a massive winner, and the Russell was a loser. I mean, it's really...
I mean, the Russell literally traded me for 15 months. I recall maybe 3 weeks out of 15 months where they did the best of the major four indexes. And I would say probably 70% of the time they were the worst of the four. And now all of a sudden, the last week and a half, you know, just sell the NASDAQ, sell the bank stocks, and, you know, buy the regional banks, buy the KEW, buy the Russell, and you're a kingpin. So, well, you know, and that's what something, I mean, and I'm not saying that this is it, But to stay at home, oh, we got vaccines coming in. You know, knock wood, knock wood, knock wood, they do. But, you know, sell all the stay-at-home stocks, which were the stars and the skyrocket issues, and, you know, buy the depressed stuff, you know, because the economies are going to open up. And, you know, I don't get the argument for the regional banks, but for whatever reason, sell the winners, take that money, and finance all the losers.
Well, the XLF couldn't get out of its way. Could not make 23, could not make 23. Had a 23 strike forever. Now it's 24 and a half, for God's sake.
All right.
SP Futures up 875, NASDAQ down 92. Thank you, David. Be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.